Hello, I'm Rick Conti. This is number 0549, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0549. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet voice actress Tasia Valenza, who discusses her TEDx talk called Give Great Voice.
That was my passion after 35 years of being in the business, doing it, and then the last 5 years, 6 years of teaching voiceover artists and recognizing that the same gifts that we have to utilize, because we really think of our voice as an instrument, I could offer non-voiceover actors and lawyers and the doctors and students and mothers and friends, because I've realized that these underlying principles to move or touch someone with our voices to the best of our intent is a universal gift that everyone can use.
Clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber is back to talk about self-deprecating humor.
This study is important because it does stand up and say that there are a lot of people who actually do self-deprecating humor because they have a strong ego, a strong sense of self, and they are more concerned with, you know, putting a smile on somebody's face instead of saving their own ego or whatever.
Cynthia Barnett, author of I'm Not Done Yet and You Shouldn't Be Either, talks about how to get free cruises by giving lectures on board.
When I first started it, I really didn't know what the process was. So I did write to the cruise ship telling them that I was already booked on a cruise. So I wanted to do a presentation on board just to get evaluation. And they allowed me to do that. So I made a presentation on board. And then they sent me to the agent. So since then, I know that the agents are the ones who really do all the negotiating. And so I got good evaluation. They sent me to an agent. And then the rest is history.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news. And of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0549, was Rick Conti, a retired firefighter here in Montreal and a childhood friend of mine. We spent years and years and years as kids and teenagers playing Strat-O-Matic baseball in leagues, and he's still trying to get me in a league. Yeah. Thank you very much, Rick, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. Police in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, arrested 52-year-old Robert Lee Noy on February 17th and charged him with first-degree harassment and false imprisonment after his victim told them that Noy kidnapped her and forced her to watch the 1977 historical miniseries Roots so that she could better understand her racism.
Tonight, we present a landmark in television entertainment. Roots, the true story Alex Haley uncovered in his 12-year search across the seven generations of his ancestry. Now, we are proud to present the triumph of an American family, Roots.
Noy allegedly told her that if she did not sit for the entire 9-hour series about slavery, he would kill her and spread her body parts across Interstate 380 on the way to Chicago. You know, Noy wanting to force her to admittedly call herself a racist usually doesn't work. You can't get people to call themselves by a name you choose for them.
I want to hear you say your name. Your name is Toby. What's your name?
Gunter.
By the way, happy Black History Month. Tensions are running high in China, where the coronavirus has affected thousands of people and sparked instances of panic buying. Agence France-Presse reports that supermarkets have experienced runs on staples such as rice and pasta, But in Hong Kong, a gang of men wielding knives attacked a delivery driver in Mong Kok on February 17th, making off with hundreds of rolls of toilet paper. Police said the missing rolls were recovered and two suspects were arrested. Locals seemed baffled, with one woman telling a television station, "I'd steal face masks, but not toilet roll." You know, I'm just wondering if the paper was one or two ply. I mean, that's an important point when plotting a theft, don't you think? Well, under the headline of Annals of Entitlement, let me share the story of 36-year-old Saloni Ketterpal. Again, I have to restate that this woman is 36 years old. Yet she threw a tantrum worthy of the terrible twos on February 13th when she repeatedly called 911 to report that her parents had canceled her cell phone service. Ketterpal demanded that officers respond to her home in Jackson Township, Ohio, and was warned that she should only call 911 for a legitimate emergency. Several hours later, she called back, became belligerent, and told the dispatcher that she thought it was a legitimate issue. Again, I remind you that this is a 36-year-old woman, a woman who is also a real estate agent. She was arrested and charged with disrupting public services. It was unclear why her dad, a gastroenterologist, and her mom, a pediatric dentist, canceled their daughter's phone service, but I'm guessing this was long overdue.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service.
I wonder what her one call from prison will be. I'm guessing it's not her parents. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, an unnamed 33-year-old woman in Hermione, Pennsylvania, took an unconventional route home after a night out drinking on February 16th. Driving a Mazda CX-5, the woman left a tavern and ended up in a rail yard near the Port Perry Railroad Bridge, a narrow span that carries one set of tracks over the Monongahela River. The vehicle did quite well, considering it is not a locomotive, noted police, and the driver traveled a significant distance along the bridge before getting stuck. The woman called 911 for help at about 2:40 a.m., and Norfolk Southern stopped all rail traffic while the car was removed from the tracks. Police arrested the driver for DUI. Well, that's good that they removed her, because nobody wants to be on the tracks when a train is coming. Oh, that's going to leave a mark. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Tasia Valenza is an Emmy-winning voiceover artist, actress, and motivational speaker. She has lent her voice to video games, commercials, and animated TV shows, playing such roles as Poison Ivy in the animated Batman series. Plus, she's also heard in Star Wars Resistance, Star Wars Clone Wars, and Sniper Wolf, just to name a few. She has given a TEDx talk called Give Great Voice. Tasia joins us on the line right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Tasia.
Hi, Pete. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, you have been in this business for a long time. I have been in this business for a long time. And I find that when people come along with your credentials who are giving talks about how to use their voice, they're usually talking to people who are already in the business or who want to be in the business. But your TED talk, your TEDx talk, was for the general population about giving good voice, right?
Yes, to give great voice even. Yes, that was my passion after 35 years of being in the business, doing it, and then the last 5 years, 6 years of teaching voiceover artists and recognizing that the same gifts that we have to utilize, because we really think of our voice as an instrument, I could offer non-voiceover actors and lawyers and the doctors and students and mothers and friends, because I've realized that these principles, these underlying principles to give great voice, to move or touch someone with our voices to the best of our intent, is a universal gift that everyone can use. And based on the fact that we seem to be using our voices less and less nowadays, I thought it was a great time to share that.
Was there an aha moment for you when you said, you know, I've got to share what I know, I've got to share my talent and my gift with the general population this way?
You know, that's an interesting question, and it was an evolving mission. You know, it started as one thing where it was more about, I was really noticing even my own teenagers, a lot of the way they spoke and with the upspeak, and I would just be out of my mind. A lot of the technical things that were changing in the way they spoke, and I wanted to help them. Of course, being a voiceover artist, it was very noticeable. And I realized in the last 10 years, as our digital communication has become so much more overtaking of our verbal, that it's changed into something much deeper and more meaningful than the technical aspect of speaking well, but more the emotional combined with the technical, that not only is our voice a powerful, I feel, our most powerful communication tool, but it's something that we need to continue to utilize and practice both for our success in our professional lives and in our success in our emotional lives. We know really, as in the TED Talk, texting is great and writing is great, but it holds a lot more weight when it's more factual information. And when it becomes emotional information, such as I love you or I'm sorry, tone counts so much. And I just wanted to share and support how we can continue to use our voices more successfully by practicing and thinking about intentionally speaking. So, like, what do we want to say? And not only do we want to say, but how do we want to land our message? Because it's not so much the words we say a lot of the time, but how we say it that counts.
Again, you do a lot of voiceovers, and doing voiceover, you're heard but not seen. When you're talking about what you're offering, such as what you talk about in your TEDx talk, are you talking about also helping a person boost up their own confidence in being able to speak that then conveys that confidence to those who they speak to?
100%. Yeah, Give Great Voice is a holistic platform, meaning that when we give great voice to others, it's very difficult when we're not feeling confident. And where does confidence come from? Self-esteem. Self-esteem comes from the inside. So we must what? Give great voice to ourselves. To me, I call that a language, a foreign language for a lot of people. You know, we'll tear ourselves down easily. I'm an idiot. I'm stupid. But how many of us go around, you know, at least in the mirror and say, I'm amazing and I love myself, you know, an affirmation. And so I put that in the TED Talk as part of playing the courageous, confident candidate, that we not only have to breathe, which is an acronym BEAD, breathe, empower, affirm, and dress, but we have to do positive self-speak. And I actually was fortunate enough to be part of an affirmation meditation app that I co-created and wrote and voiced, which is a tool, it's completely free, that one can give great voice to themselves and affirm themselves daily. And then when they have that kind of inner confidence and they feel good about themselves, then they can go out and play their roles more successfully. Play the role of the confident candidate, play the role of the colleague and the coworker that feels good, and play the role of, you know, the parent that struggles just as I do, how to be the best parent I can be without, you know, falling into the trap of being reactive to my kids, you know, and yelling at them to pick up their clothes, as opposed to just kindly mentioning it for the 800th time, you know, can you pick up your clothes? As opposed to, can you pick up your clothes? You know, it's really one thing leads to the other. When you feel good inside, then you have a lot more bandwidth to express yourself in a confident, kind, considerate way.
Now, I've watched your TEDx talk, and you talk about the fact that you change your voice when you're talking to your children. I'm just curious to know if they've seen that TED Talk and if they feel they're being played.
Well, you see, I was very transparent in the TEDx Talk. I didn't say, like, you know, and the way you speak to your children is this. I was like, I'm very reactive when I ask them to pick up their socks, and they can attest to this very often. When I remember and I take a breath, I can speak to them more effectively. But they are my best, shall we say, critics, in terms of they will say to me in the middle of a speech, you know, that I'm asking them to, that's not really giving great voice, is it, Mom? Is it? And I'm like, okay, called out. Thank you for the reminder. I shall be a little calmer, and I shall make sure that my voice doesn't come out as shrill. So, yeah, they keep me accountable, and I love that.
As someone who is a voiceover artist, an Emmy-winning voiceover artist, you've been doing this for quite a while, so it becomes a little bit like second nature to do what you do for a living. I'm just kind of curious, when you were preparing to do the TEDx talk, did you have to kind of remind yourself the tools and the skills that you're trying to convey so that you were ready to see a crowd in front of you as opposed to just working behind a mic?
Yeah, I have to say, of course, I was nervous. Yeah, just like, you know, anything. You know, I used to be on camera actress and theater, and so I did a lot more stage work in front of crowds, and I haven't been doing as much. So it was definitely something that I had to use my own techniques of calming myself with some lovely deep breaths and affirming myself that this was going to be a great experience and that I was going to be of service. And then, you know, kind of being okay with some of the lesser fantastic parts of it. So yes, I have to walk my own talk because, yeah, after being in a closet for 25 years mostly, it's definitely back to a different medium. But it was great because I got to use the very same skills that I share that we can all use. Because, you know, what is public speaking like close to like second on the list to death, you know, before like what people are afraid of. They fear public speaking and then they fear death. So yeah, it's definitely a universal fear, and I had to overcome my own. But thankfully I did, and it was a really wonderful experience, I think, for myself and the audience.
Yeah, when it comes to public speaking and death, as you mentioned, some people would rather be in the casket than do the eulogy.
Wow, I've never heard that particular one, but I'll go. I love that.
But
I think we all do. We all get afraid, and it's something we can utilize tools to overcome.
You've worked as an actress on stage, but is it different? Is it a different set of fear? Is it a different set of skills when you're working as an actress on stage in a role as opposed to being yourself on stage?
That's interesting that you mentioned that. Yeah, of course, when you're, and I do talk in the TEDx about how we play our roles, but of course, when you're given lines that you have to memorize and you're kind of imbuing yourself into a character, you can kind of lose yourself. You kind of put the mask on. And being on a stage where you're really presenting your own ideas and you're writing it, so you're much more vulnerable because it's like, not only do they maybe not like the performance of a character, but then, wow, did they actually like what I had to offer? So yeah, much more vulnerable position. But perhaps because I've just been, my heart knows that this is something that's valuable and I feel committed to it. I just went with it and believed in it. And also, I think naming it sometimes, you know, just saying I'm nervous and I want to be of service and I hope that I can give my best, as opposed to like saying, oh my God, it's going to be, what's going to happen if someone doesn't like me? I think it's, again, that internal speech that I just feel like, okay, I'm going to do the best I can. I'm going to give the best I can, and hopefully it will be received well. And at the end of the day, not everyone is going to, you know, someone said to me once, and it's a great metaphor, think of yourself as like the best ice cream. And I love Rocky Road. So I think it was my therapist at the time who said, you know, well, so Rocky Road stays Rocky Road. It's delicious, right? But a lot of people don't like Rocky Road. It doesn't make you any less delicious. And I was like, I like that. So that's how I think when I go on stage and I give a talk. It's like, okay, on Rocky Road, you like it, wonderful. And if you don't, it doesn't reflect on me that I'm not tasty, but that, you know, it just wasn't your thing.
Your TED Talk, the audience was, I guess, primarily adults. But I'm just curious to know, do you think what you are offering, is something that should be taught in schools?
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because it was actually at a college, La Sierra University, and they invited a whole bunch of high schoolers to come. So the audience went from 13 up to like 80. And I have to say that thankfully the feedback from the high schoolers was just as enthusiastic as the older crowd, because they have to get into schools and do interview processes and plan on getting jobs someday. And they are the ones who are really literally growing up without the kinds of verbal communication skills they need, because they're not having to do it nearly as much, right? In the last, 10 years? I think there's a percentage that millennials would prefer, and younger, like 80% of their communication. I read that in the Atlantic from texting. So I think that they
find value in it. And because I'm presenting it in a novel way, kind of from the lens of a voiceover actor, they really enjoyed it a little bit more because it wasn't kind of a lecture of a, you know, a professor saying, now you must speak this way. So I think because I was lending some novelty to it, I think teenagers from high school on up can really enjoy it and actually hopefully gain a couple tips that will further their ability and confidence in their verbal communication skills.
It's a fascinating topic.
Yes.
It's a fascinating TED Talk as well. Besides seeing your TED Talk, we've got just about a minute here. Again, you're an award-winning voiceover artist. What are you doing next, and where can we hear you or see you?
Thank you so much. You're making my day. I'm blushing at this point. well, I'm always doing different series, and I have I'm actually doing a narration series for Discovery ID called My Murder Story, which will be coming out. I have an NFL series that'll be coming out. And in terms of animation and video games, you know, they always keep us like kind of locked down until it actually comes out. So as soon as I can, but I'm at TasiaValenza.com or GiveBrightVoice.com. And I'm always posting on my social media, whatever projects I'm on. So that would be, you know, Tasia Valenza on all social media, and just sharing whether it's a talk that I'm giving or some fun animation I did or anything in the realm of what it means to give great voice. So that's the place to find me.
Tasia, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter. I really appreciate it.
Emmy Award-winning voice actress Tasia Valenza. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0549, and you'll find links to Tasia's TEDx talk, plus links to her website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come on the program, we will touch base with Dr. John Huber to talk about self-deprecating humor. Also, we'll meet the author of I'm Not Done Yet, and You Shouldn't Be Either, about getting free cruises. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com, and whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the stuff. The Select Board of Croydon, New Hampshire, ruled unexpectedly on February 18th that it would abolish the town police department and rely instead on the New Hampshire State Police for law enforcement. Croydon Police Chief Richard Lee, the sole member of the police department for almost 20 years, said he was asked to turn in his equipment, including his uniform, badges, and the keys to his police cruiser. So at the meeting's conclusion, Lee faced the board president and, quote, gave them my uniform shirt, I gave them my turtleneck, I gave them my ballistic vest, I sat down in the chair, took off my boots, took off my pants, put those on the chair, and put my boots back on, and walked out the door. Lee walked for about a mile in 26th Fahrenheit degree or minus 3 degrees Celsius temperatures before his wife picked him up. The Select Board released a statement saying the decision was an action based upon value for the cost of the department. Resident Rick Sampson told reporters, "What kind of town lets their chief of police walk out in a snowstorm in his underwear?" You know, there's only one thing to say about the Select Board of Croydon, New Hampshire.
You're despicable.
Yeah, I smell a lawsuit. This reminds me of the opening scene of the television show Branded with Chuck Connors that used to be on in the 60s.
What do you do when you're branded? Will you fight for your name?
Are you one of those people who sometimes brings their work home with them? Bet you can't top this story. Police in Florida are investigating the gruesome discovery of jars of human tongues in a home's crawl space. The preserved organs were found during an inspection of the foundation in the Gainesville house, which was previously owned by Ronald Bauman, a former University of Florida researcher. Some of the jars date back to the 1960s. Investigators are looking into the possibility that Bauman, who published studies in the following two decades, may have brought the tongues home as part of his work. Bauman currently is a professor emeritus at the university. You know, apparently there isn't any crime here. What you've got is a whole lot of tongues, but nobody talking. As a sidebar, I also have a question. As a teacher, what kind of punishment did he mete out if students talked out of turn in class? Just wondering. And talk about one pissed off soldier. A U.S. airman based in Alaska was reportedly punished last week for urinating in an office coffee maker.
Always good to the last drop.
The unnamed airman was demoted to Airman Basic, which is the lowest rank possible in the United States Air Force. The soldier was also reprimanded, although it wasn't known what that entailed. Apparently, this airman is no stranger to reprimands, having previously received 5 letters, according to a newsletter written by the legal office of Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson on February 13th, which was later posted on an Air Force Facebook page. In the newsletter, the airman was demoted and punished for failure to refrain from urinating in the office coffee maker. Yeah, because default behavior is apparently peeing in the office coffee maker, and we need to constantly remind ourselves not to do that. Wow.
Nothing will stop the U.S. Air Force.
Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Are you able to laugh at yourself? According to a study, frequent use of self-deprecating humor has been linked to a better overall psychological well-being. When you hear someone making fun of themselves, you would usually assume that they're doing so to conceal their insecurities. However, the study has found that to be the opposite, and that may be the case. Once again, we are joined by Dr. John Huber. He is a clinical forensic psychologist and the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, which is a nonprofit organization. He once again joins us on the line from deep in the heart of Texas. Hello, sir.
How are you?
Just tickety-boo, sir. Just tickety-boo.
Excellent.
So I have spent a lot of time in my career working and hanging around a lot of comedians. And even they would say the old theory that it was basically to conceal their insecurities. But this study says that's the opposite. Do you agree with the study?
Well, you know, I think that there's some validity to both points. But this study is important because it does stand up and say that there are a lot of people who actually do self-deprecating humor because they have a strong ego, a strong sense of self, and they are more concerned with, you know, putting a smile on somebody's face instead of saving their own ego or whatever. So, you know, there is a lot to that. And the study was, you know, actually published in Personality and Individual Differences Journal. And they studied over 1,000 people between the ages of 18 and 65. It was done actually across 5 separate studies. So it wasn't like one group of researchers found this all on their own. It was, a group, multiple studies going on at the same time. So I have to say this thing holds water just because what I know about statistics and sampling and all that kind of stuff. It is very interesting, though, because we do know people who put on that front and self-deprecate as a means to cope with their own insecurities as opposed to making people take the pressure off their own insecurities and put them on my strong ego. So I think we have both sides out there, but I think that that's really what's more important about this study than the fact that it's different than everything else.
I'm going to question the study only a little bit. I'm not questioning its validity, but I do have one point, and that is that in a lot of cases, humor can be cultural. This study was, if I'm not mistaken, done in Spain.
Yes.
And sometimes the type of humor that some societies exhibit differs from location to location. And I'm not sure whether the Spaniards, for instance, might just generally be more self-deprecating.
It may be. But one of the things we also understand is about language. And you look at the Romance languages, the French, Spanish, German, not so much. But English is kind of an amalgam of all those different ones. And then you get to some of the more tonal languages, whether it's Mandarin or Japanese or Cantonese. And the humor does change based on how the language is used. And I totally agree with you that this study does need to be repeated. It needs to be replicated. And we need to do it across cultures, not just in English-speaking America, but also I think we should go look at places like Thailand and Taiwan and China and Japan and look at those, and as well as south of the border, go down to Argentina.
As someone who was a psychologist, even before this study, were you concerned or would you question a patient who would come in who was highly self-deprecating?
Now that's a different situation, because with a patient, I have a history with them, and I typically know their triggers, and I know what is the thing that's going to push them over the edge kind of stuff. And if they start self-deprecating, it's really hard for them to hide those triggers from me. And it may be telling me a lot of other things. It may be telling me that, hey, I need to step in there, or we need to go get this person hospitalized, or that this person's about ready to have an anxiety attack, whatever's going on. So at that point, I step in, and I, of course, being the therapist, would start with, okay, here's what we need to do. Remember the techniques we've been working on here. Do this, and that kind of stuff, and try to pull it down and get them back on their feet, so to speak. And then we would process what just happened. So it's a different world when we're talking therapy versus, somebody walking down the street or on a street corner or on a stage at a comedy club who's doing it.
If I'm not mistaken, this study, when it was first commissioned, was a few years ago, before the heightened interest that we now have with social media. I'm just curious to know, in the world we live in, both socially and, quite frankly, politically, is it harder to discern self-deprecating humor, especially considering people don't necessarily converse as much as they used to, as opposed to text and tweet?
And the texts and tweets are devoid of any real nonverbal communication that we like to look at. Yeah, you try those emojis, but they just really don't do it, and they totally miscommunicate things. If you want to ruin a relationship, just voice a complaint with somebody over a text. That'll do it. or try to use sarcasm over a text. That's a good way to do that. And we have to realize that we are social animals, and we get so much neuropsychological enrichment by being with another human being, whether it's the smile on their face, the handshake, the hug, whatever's going on. We get so much more than the little dopamine drip we get on screen time.
What about the theory that self-deprecating humor may also note suppressed anger?
Well, it can do that, just like depression is oftentimes anger turned towards themselves, because for whatever reason, they don't feel like they can express it to whoever or whatever that anger needs to be expressed towards, in their opinion. So you've always got that. There's always that catch 22, so to speak. And that's where, if you have issues like this, you shouldn't be afraid to go talk to a professional, because they can call you on the stuff. Now, if you're not willing to listen to them, I have a close friend who was talking the other day and literally had this long behavior over the last 9 or 10 months. And I'm like, I sat down with him and I said, look, you've had some changes that I've noticed in the past year. This is going on. I think you might benefit from talking to somebody. Just totally blew up at me. I'm not crazy. And then I'm like, wait a minute, that's not what this is about. This is a friend. I'm a psychologist, but this is a friend coming to you. You are pushing people away from you right now, and you don't see it. And you're coming to complain to me. So how do we do that with somebody, because they have direct overt behaviors that say they're depressed? And how do we do that on a screen now? It makes it even more difficult. So I think we have a lot of growing to do as a species, I think these social media apps and the sites have a lot more information than they want us to know they have. An example of this was, you know, my kids know what I do, and since they've been in school over the years, they've referred to me and brought me in because one of their friends, several occasions, probably 12 or 13 times since they've been in school, has started talking about things that were not appropriate as far as, you know, self-harm and like that. And in each case, we were able to intervene and get some help. But one of the last cases, it was a student who moved away, very suicidal, very depressed, on Snapchat. I'll go ahead and say that the app. And we turned around and we tried to call the parents so we could sit and talk with them and say, hey, you know, this is what we saw. You need to be aware of it. Please help out and, you know, help your daughter. Well, their numbers were disconnected. They had changed them. And we didn't have a way to get a hold of them. And we're like, oh, well, Monday we can get a hold of the school counselor because they know what school they went to and they could follow them that way. But it's Friday afternoon. You know, there's a lot of time. And this girl sounded like very imminent, like right then. So on a lark, I just texted one of the management links or whatever, support links on Snapchat. And about a half an hour later, they sent a little text back saying that they had gotten a hold of the parents and thank you very much.
Wow.
And so I was really impressed with that. And I think that's one of the reasons why I went ahead and said that about Snapchat. I don't know if they're all doing that, but I started talking to some of these people in Facebook and Snapchat, and they know by the language that's used. You know, if you're using a lot of self-deprecating humor or a lot of negatives, they can tell, and they've got algorithms that tell them whether the people who are online are depressed or not.
Going back to that friend of yours who rebuffed you, saying he was not crazy, what would you have preferred? He get angry, or he simply say, oh, John, always bringing your work home.
Well, that's kind of what it started out as. But the reality of it is, and I tell this to my kids, I tell this to my students, I would guarantee you, you'd much rather have one of your friends be mad at you the rest of their lives for the next 20, 30, 40 years than be dead next weekend.
Absolutely.
And that's where it's at. And I believe that 100% because I love that person. I love my friends and I want to make sure that they're safe. And if they want to turn it around on me and tell me I'm just, you know, bringing my work home and all that kind of stuff, well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but I've done as much as I can do. You can take a horse to water, but you can't make them drink.
Absolutely. Now, going back to what I said earlier about it perhaps being cultural, you said that, you know, this study needs to be done again in other locales. Do you think if the study were done in North America, it would be different, or would the results be similar?
I think the results would be similar, and part of it may have to do with the test construction, which we need to find out. That's why I want to see the different languages being used, because when you start translating things, we oftentimes can't use word for word. So what is the equivalent meaning in those languages? So we may be hitting on certain things that, like you mentioned, may be very specific for the Spanish culture in Spain, but may have nothing to do with the people in Venezuela or Argentina. We need to know that. And the only way to do that is to continue on. But I think that the study itself is a great study because it makes us realize that maybe what we see on the surface isn't always what we think it is. And yeah, we know people who are hiding behind their humor and their comedy because they do have internal conflicts. But at the same time, it doesn't mean everybody out there is. And now we have evidence that says some of those people are out there because they're trying to take people and take that self-deprecation off of them and put it up there on the stage while they're behind that microphone.
John, always a pleasure to have you on the program to talk about these things. Thank you once again for being on the show.
You are the man. Thank you so much. And I love your show, The Stuff File.
Thank you, John. That's Dr. John Huber, Chairman for Mainstream Mental Health. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0549, and you'll find links to John's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that's finger-licking good, if you're into that sort of thing.
And still to come in the program, we'll learn how you can get free cruises and what you have to do to get one. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and also on Spotify. 28-year-old Sharika Strawn must have panicked when the car she was riding in was pulled over by police in Wichita Falls, Texas on January 15th for a minor traffic violation. According to the probable cause affidavit, Strawn, who had several outstanding warrants, identified herself as Porchella Strawn, but was apparently unaware that a records check revealed Porchella had also an outstanding warrant on her. Now, Sharika was arrested and is facing a number of charges, including allegedly giving a false name. Now, I've checked many sources for this story, and it's not quite clear as to whether or not Sharika knows Porchella, though the odds of someone with an unusual first name rolling the dice with another unusual first name and coming up craps are rare at best. So, no matter how you cut it, this is weird. Also, now I'm kind of curious to know where Porchella is. And finally, a man who tried to steal goats from a farmer in Stafford County, Virginia, pretended to be intoxicated and gave deputies a false name. The farmer told deputies his wife had gone out to check on their goats Friday night and saw that they were let out of their pen. She suspected there was something, or someone rather, hiding in their field. Her husband then found the suspect, 19-year-old Cole Schrock, and held him at gunpoint until deputies arrived. When deputies got there, the farmer told them he thought the suspect was intoxicated and was trying to steal his goats. Deputies said Schrock was slurring his words and initially gave them a false name. The suspect later admitted to pretending to be intoxicated, which deputies confirmed with a breath test. Deputies found three goats tied up next to the suspect's nearby pickup truck. At one point, the farmer realized the suspect had recently bought a few goats from him. He said he hadn't recognized Schrock at first because of the hood covering his face. Schrock was arrested and charged with larceny of animals, identity theft to avoid arrest, and unlawful entry with intent to commit larceny. A couple of questions. Do we know what happened to the goats he bought earlier? And are you concerned about why he was now taking these three goats? Maybe he was just lonely. After all, this all took place on a Friday night. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? When Cynthia Barnett retired 15 years ago, she had a fantasy. She wanted to enjoy cruising without having to pay for it, and she figured out how to do just that. Cynthia has cruised to Alaska, Hawaii, Europe, and the Caribbean without paying a thing. Cynthia is a PhD and the author of I'm Not Done Yet, and You Shouldn't Be Either, a book that inspires people to make the most of their retirement years. She joins us on the line from Connecticut. Hi, Cynthia.
Hey, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. So you started doing this 15 years ago. Exactly how do you do this?
It's a bartering arrangement. The cruise ships
want to provide service, extra services for their passengers. So they have someone like me do presentations. And I'm actually called a cultural lecturer. So basically, I lecture on whatever culture or whatever destination that we are visiting.
So how did this get started? Because you have been successful at this for the past 15 years, but how do you get this going? How do you approach a cruise line and say, this is what I have to offer and here's why I should be on your cruise?
Actually, you don't really approach the cruise liner. You find, if you went on the internet, you just Google agents for cruises. And the agents are the one who make the presentation to the cruise ship and do all the negotiations.
Okay, so what was the first one you did, and how many have you done since, and what do the topics vary from?
Actually, when I first started it, I really didn't know what the process was. So I did write to the cruise ship and asked them, telling them that I was already booked on a cruise. So I wanted to do a presentation on board just to get evaluation. And they allowed me to do that. So I made a presentation on board, and then they sent me to the agent. So since then, I know that the agents are the ones who really do all the negotiating. And so I got good evaluations. They sent me to an agent, and then the rest is history. I've been working with a few agents over the past 15 years, and what they do is send me a list of the different cruise ships and what they need. And I decide which ones I want to pursue. But I want to back up and say that to do a presentation to the agent, you do have to show that you are able to work with an audience. And you do have to make a video of you working with a group. So I went through that whole thing, and they interviewed me. And since then, they just sent me a list.
I mentioned in the introduction that you're a PhD. I also believe you are a teacher. So was that part of your ease in talking in front of crowds like this, the fact that you were a teacher?
Well, I don't think you have to be a teacher, but it made me much more comfortable in front of a group because I had teaching experience with both students and with adults. Also, being a teacher, I'm able to do good research on different topics and different countries. So that has really been an asset for me. But everyone does not have to be a teacher. You just have to really love the subject that you're going to be presenting on and be able to make a good presentation.
So what is your schedule like when you're on the cruise? A cruise is how many days normally that you go on, and how many times do you have to speak or give a lecture on these cruises?
Okay, like the last one I was on was 14 days in December. We went to the Caribbean. So on the 14-day cruise, I only made 4 presentations. And the presentations were only when the ship was in the ocean. Like, for example, it took us 2 days to get to, like, Puerto Rico. So I did 2 presentations. And once we started visiting all different islands and got on shore, no presentations. And in returning back to New York, there were also 2 days at sea. And I did 2 other presentations. The presentations are really just about 45 minutes. And really, really cool because I'm doing what I love to do and sharing about the culture of the different islands.
So in this case, you're going to the Caribbean and you're giving a cultural chat on the islands that people will be going to when they reach port?
Yeah, what I did this time was I talked about the festivals in the Caribbean. So the festivals in the Caribbean highlighted many different festivals, because that is what the passengers would want to know about. And when I was in Puerto Rico, I talked about the beauty of Puerto Rico, the forest, the El Junque forest, and I talked about many different things to see in Puerto Rico that they wouldn't normally see.
Now, I mentioned you've been to Alaska, Hawaii, and Europe in addition to the Caribbean. So when you are doing cruises to those destinations, are you gearing your chats on those destinations, and are your lectures and discussions always about travel, or are they on other topics?
They're always about the destination. It's all, I'm a destination lecturer. So when I go to Europe, for example, when I did the Mediterranean, I talked a lot about Barcelona. And when I went to Egypt, we talked about the pyramids. So it depends on what countries you're visiting that I would pick a theme to talk about.
Your book is I'm Not Done Yet, and You Shouldn't Be Either. Is this the kind of attitude, the kind of foresight that you're giving to readers, the idea that, you know, you have retired and you found your way of enjoying retirement by giving lectures and cruising for free? Is that just one aspect of what you're talking about in your book?
That is just very small aspect of it, because my belief is I do not believe in the word retirement. I call my life, I'm living a refired life, doing exactly what I want to do. And then I help other people to figure out what they want to do. So I help them with a program I call Purpose, Passion, and a Paycheck. So once you know your purpose and your passion, you can get a paycheck out of it.
Before you retired, before you started doing this, when you were thinking about what your future might be like after you stopped working, did you have an aha moment where everything just clicked in your head and you said, this is what I'm going to do?
Not really. I knew that I was going to retire and not retire, but I really didn't know what that was going to look like. But I really didn't know exactly how I was going to go about it. So it all came about through experience, research, and hiring my own coaches to help me along the way.
So you actually hired coaches?
Absolutely. I believe in making an investment in myself. So I hired a coach to help me figure it all out.
What do people talk to you about, or what do people ask you, especially when, you know, maybe you're doing a book tour of some kind and you're talking about your book? You know, because a lot of people, I'm sure, they're hearing what you're saying and they might be interested in doing this, but they're a little hesitant or scared to make that leap. What do you say to them to help nudge them in the direction that they should be going?
Well, it's all about knowing that in the research shows that we can live way into our 80s. So the question is, what are you going to do at that time? So it's about helping them figure out what they want to do at their time, because everybody is different. And sometimes when people make no plans, then they're struggling, they're depressed, they're fearful of the future, they really don't know what to do. So basically, I help them figure out what they will do. Because they also, you know, it's very difficult sometimes to do it on your own. But if you have somebody holding your hand, guiding you step by step, then they're able to make a move.
You take all these trips. Is there still a location or a destination that you are dying to get to that you haven't had a chance to go yet? And are you working on towards that one?
Not really. I have found that in my later years, I don't like flying.
Ah.
So I really stay local, going to the Caribbean and short flights. So I don't go to Europe anymore or Hawaii or Alaska. But I did those for many years. So right now I'm not really thinking of a destination that I really, really want to go to. I would love to go to, I can't think of the name right now, but it's too far. The flight is too long. So I don't
You mean like Australia or New Zealand?
Yeah, Dubai. That's the one I would like to
Dubai.
Go to.
Okay.
But the flight of 12, 14 hours, that does not turn me on.
Okay. Well, what is your favorite destination?
Egypt.
And why is that?
Egypt. Oh my God. It was just so awesome sitting below those pyramids. And trying to figure out how did they get all those stones to make a pyramid so many thousands of years ago. Mm. So I sit on the bottom of one of those stones, and it's just a marvel. That, to me, was my best and favorite trip.
Well, you are definitely leading a charmed life. The book is called I'm Not Done Yet, and You Shouldn't Be Either. And people can check out your website, which is refiredontretire.com. Cynthia, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
And thank you. It's been a pleasure with you today.
Cynthia Barnett, author of I'm Not Done Yet and You Shouldn't Be Either. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0549. And you'll find links to Cynthia's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
An unnamed teenager in Norfolk County, Ontario, called Ontario Provincial Police to report that he had been scammed. He paid for an item online which didn't arrive, and he wanted to file charges against the seller. While the police did, in fact, open a fraud investigation, they weren't exactly sympathetic to the teen. The item he bought was fake identification. Said Constable Ed Sanchuk, sending your personal and identifying information to an unknown individual or fake ID business opens the door to someone stealing your identity. Wow. Although, really, who would want to be him? I mean, why? Oh, why? Would you send all of your information to someone online to purchase a fake ID? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0549. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0549. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. If you were listening to this at the same time as watching The Wizard of Oz and listening to Pink Floyd's The Dark Side of the Moon, well, it's a waste of electricity. There are some things you just can't multitask.